Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, that's great. That sounds terrific. Thank you.
And welcome to another Friday night's edition of Center Stage. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. So glad that you guys decided to hang out with us this Friday night. We should have a very interesting show tonight. We got a lot of very interesting topics we're going to talk about tonight. It's going to be another Friday night of hot topics because there's so much going on in the news, we just can't keep up. And to do a two-hour show on just one story just doesn't seem wise anymore. So we just decided to spread it out and talk about a little of everything. So tonight we're going to be talking about basically there's a new medical law mandated basically about private conversations with your child in the doctor's office. So you take your child into the doctor's office for, it could be a routine visit or it could be an emergency or whatever, but the doctor or the nurse will pull your child aside for about 15 minutes and have a private discussion with them. And you are not going to be privy to that conversation. So we're going to talk about that tonight. Is that a good thing or is that a bad thing? Are we also going to talk about the school? This school is in California, in San Marcos, California, where they asked eighth graders how far they had gone sexually. Again, good thing or bad thing. Sex ed classes are not what they used to be. But this particular school in San Marcos, California, decided that they were going to do, as part of the class, a question and answer, I guess, if you will, about whether or not your child had, you know, been totally sexually active or partially sexually active, or if they had not participated in sex at all. They went there. They went there with the kids at that school. So we're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about the shooting at Seattle Pacific University. Another shooting on another school campus. What is really going on? We're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about something we missed to cover last week and we didn't, and that was the VA hospitals. They've been under fire lately. What is that really about? And so we're going to talk about how they're treating our veterans. Also, we want to cover, there are 10 corporations, y'all, that control almost everything we buy. 10, as many products as there are on the market, there's 10 companies that are basically controlling it all. That's going to be very interesting. And also, last but not least, I saw something on Facebook today that grabbed my attention, and I'm just going to throw that out there. It was just it really didn't give the story in full. It just gave some video of a father who had called the police in because his son was misbehaving. The video did not detail just how badly the child had been misbehaving, but the video, you know, when the police come in, the father is saying to the kid as the police are putting the kid in handcuffs, you know, I'm doing this for your good, you know, this is, you're going to thank me later, da-da-da. So is this something we want to do? Do we want to start bringing the police in to parent our children or to assist us in parenting our children? Well, you know, again, good thing, bad thing, I don't know. But I'm so glad Christopher Bonds and A.J. Houston is in the building and they can help me sort it all out. Good evening, guys. How you doing?
Good evening, Mr. Jim Carrey.
Good evening. Christopher, you got some static in your background. Is that your phone?
Thanks,
okay, was that you, AJ?
Yeah, good evening.
Okay, well, y'all sort it out. Well, listen, AJ say I didn't say it at the beginning of the show last week, so I'll say it at the beginning of the show this week. Listen, I love these guys. Seriously. AJ and Christopher are like my brothers, and if I don't say it enough, I just want you guys to know I appreciate you all so much every week for hanging out Center Stage. Listen, y'all, Carrie couldn't do Center Stage by herself. Christopher and AJ, listen, they are Center Stage. So I just wanted to acknowledge that again this week at the beginning of the show to say how much I appreciate you guys, okay?
I did not call you out like that, Carrie. Don't be putting me on blast like that. I did not.
Christopher, you know. He ain't going to say nothing. He's going to even not. Okay, Christopher, we ain't going to put you in the
middle. AJ's my brother.
See? He takes AJ's side. Don't figure. We're going to leave it alone. But anyway, how you guys doing this week?
Doing good.
Doing just fine, thank you.
Well, great. Listen, y'all, with so much in the news this weekend, and I had a really busy week, but these are the stories that just popped out at me. They just, you know, there's some that I can just see and I don't, you know, put any thought to it, but these just kind of jumped out at me. This first one, and Christopher's in the medical field, so maybe he can kind of give us a little insight as to what he knows about this, if they're even doing this in the military as well. But basically, there is a new Michigan law, and there is no opting out, where an adolescent 12 to 17 years old, basically they're requiring a nurse to have a short 5-minute private conversation with the child. And basically the new policy allows the child to have access to his or her medical records online, and the child would be allowed to block a parent from viewing the website. So I'm going to stop right there, and there's more to this. But just, you know, just that much. Is there a problem when you are taking your child into the doctor? You're the parent. You know, you're paying all the bills. This is your child. But the law will allow your child to have a private conversation where they may be disclosing information to the nurse that maybe you are not even aware of. Is this a good thing or a bad thing?
You know, it can be either or. A good thing is in the case that maybe the parent or the guardian who's bringing the child in may be a part of the problem, whether that's neglect, abuse. But on the other hand, on the normal day-to-day of a parent bringing their minor in, most parents, number one, would probably not be used to or comfortable with that just being enacted. I know it's happened in Michigan, but I know myself as a parent and even as a medical provider, I wouldn't be comfortable simply because it's for some of those things that you said. You know, when the parent pays the bill, the parent is responsible for the care, the nurturing of that child. I don't think it's acceptable just in general to pass that because that's, to me, that's broad legislation. And then to me, it also says that the state is imposing that they have more of a right than a parent does. So it's almost as though the state has ownership or responsibility, but they don't because they don't pay the bills and do those things that most parents do. So the stipulation is across the board, and like I said, only in cases that it would be something specific in nature where the doctor felt there was something in terms of abuse or something going on, and the child may need to talk to a provider prior to. That might be one thing, and that would be on a case-by-case basis. But broadly, there's no way in the world I'd be in favor of it.
AJ.
Well, I'm saying it's an age thing, too, because when you look around, there's so many things going on in our community and in the nation right now that a lot of children feel better talking to somebody else besides their parents. I don't know why that is, but I'm like, whichever way you get to the core of the matter works. But I think it's bad when you talk to children that can be truly influenced by a private conversation. Because you can actually lead one, you know, because I know I was actually involved in a situation where the little girl had made claims that weren't correct about somebody I know.
Mm-hmm.
Because we knew the little girl, and she always told stories, but nobody could really, you know, no matter what you say, when the claim is made, you really have to investigate. But they had sessions with her privately, with her parents not included. And I was like, you can't really let them do that because you don't know what they're telling the child, and when the child comes out, there's no way the story turns.
Mm. Well, you know, the other thing I was going to say, and because AJ just kind of hit on a point, and you did too, Carrie, earlier, and then the legal implications, because it's like AJ was saying, if a child then utters something or says something that may or may not be true, then there's a legal quandary. The parent wasn't there to hear it, number one, and the representatives that were there, if for some reason they are not above board or for some reason they could be swayed, they could immediately go to the authorities based on what that minor said and report that, and immediately someone could be arrested or be in trouble. And it's one thing to take a statement, but it's another thing, like AG said, to investigate. And I can guarantee you 9 times out of 10, they're going to act quicker on what that child says and with the parent not being present than if the parent was present. So it presents a very touchy possibility for a legal nightmare if something becomes of what that child says and the parent is not present, because it becomes the parent's word versus the child's word.
Oh, I agree. I think they were saying that this opens the door for the doctors, you know, in essence, to ask about, you know, domestic violence in the home or whether or not the child is getting spankings. And, you know, basically, from community to community, the spanking thing is okay, not okay. You know, some people are all out for, some are not. And so, you know, it could be a situation in which, you know, based on your culture, that's just what y'all do, whereas the doctor may be from the total opposite type background where they don't believe in spanking. So, you know, it just really opens the door. You know, unless the child has obvious signs of physical abuse, I would really say this is a slippery slope. You know, because there's guidance counselors in the school in which the child can always go to if there's, you know, a situation in which they have a problem at home. But I think to prime a child to give you information, you know, and basically understand that under this new mandate, the nurse will explain to the child that the doctor's office is a safe place for them to basically receive information about STDs, HIV, birth control, and also discuss all of this in the absence of the parent. That's, again, a slippery slope, because if you have a child who is succumbing to, let's just say, peer pressure, you know, and everybody else is talking about sex, and then all of a sudden she has, you know, this open forum with this doctor, you know, who says, well, you know, we can give you condoms, or, you know, we can tell you everything you want to know about this. It just seems like it's not the place, the appropriate place for maybe your child's first introduction, you know, with an adult about that particular type of subject matter. I don't know. Would y'all agree with that? I mean, does that seem a little strong for you to just...
No, I agree, but I think it's also another entity disrobing the parents of their ability to be parents.
Yeah. It does kind of undermine the parental authority, doesn't it?
It's almost designed. I think it's almost specifically designed to do that, because if parents have a good relationship with their child, a lot of times they're going to be able to talk about those things when it's appropriate. But I'll be honest with you. The things and the providers that I ran into during my clinical training, I ran into some providers, they wanted to give every black female birth control, irregardless of what age they were, because in their mind and in the training that they received, they were pretty much taught, you know, blacks that basically have babies like rabbits, and, you know, you really need to do this. So they were not even engaged to talk about to their patients about are you sexually active, do you know about safe practices and so forth. They were almost just ready to prescribe birth control as if they were already sexually active without even communicating or trying to talk to them. But getting back to what you said, yes, it's taken away the parental rights. It's taken away the appropriateness of when a parent feels that they need to talk to their child about sex or STDs or things that their child may have concerns about. And they definitely need to do that before they're sitting there talking to the nurse or the doctor.
You know, one thing I have.
You know, don't you remember, Kerry, in Texas, they were trying to pass the law to where all the students had to have, all the women had to have this inoculation that would make, and the possibility was to make them sterile?
Yeah. Wasn't that the human papilloma, HPV? Wasn't that what it was?
That's what it was, and part of the problem is that the consensus in the science community, it had nothing to do with inoculation. In terms of prevention, it had to do with sales of that particular vaccine. And once you pass something and you mandate it as law, a lot of people don't fight it, and they just go along with it. And then that can become a problem in terms of providing something that's appropriate and that something that's actually going to do a better job in terms of overall public health and safety. But it also presented a problem because it was also promoted with the assumption that these young ladies were going to be sexually active.
one of them. I just.
I think our governor here in Texas, you know, really was all on board with that thing, and he was pretty much strong-arming until the people began to push back. And I think this is another situation in which maybe people should push back, because is this really the government trying to control every aspect of our lives, even our parenting? Because, you know, one thing, years ago when I was in college, I did an internship at juvenile court, and they had me going doing house visits for kids that had gotten in trouble. And basically, one thing I saw was you could do everything but give your child away. You know, I mean, they didn't want you to spank it. They didn't want you to do anything, you know, too strong-arming with your child. But at the same time, you couldn't give your child to the state and say, here, I tell you what, y'all want to tell me how to do it, y'all can just take the child. You couldn't do that legally. But at the same time, the law has all these rules in which tell you what you can and cannot do. And I think this is just another one in which I don't know. I just think we're going down the wrong road, because, you know, when you look at this, you know, for what it is, this is kind of scary, because kids can see a system in which they can go and maybe they got an STD. You know, maybe they didn't tell their parent, but maybe they should. So if your child contracts HIV at 13, I think the parent needs to know. And I don't think there should be a quote-unquote safe place where they can go to get care without the parents being aware that their child is sick. I think that's sick by itself.
But Carrie, in totality, what it is if you remember what the last, ever since President Barack Obama has been in office, there's been an attack on the rights of the people. And it's not by the Democratic Party, but everything that the Republicans were going for. Now they want to take away rights. They want to get rid of, you know, the right of choice. They want to give, you know, there's all these attacks on women, on the body of women, where if you want to go, you got to get probed and you got to do this and you got to. There's just so many things that they're just involving themselves in so many physical aspects of the human body. That shouldn't be a governmental entity.
Well, see, people don't realize under Agenda 21 or the New World Order, and I suggest everyone get to know what Agenda 21 is, and you can Google it, and basically the New World Order, because basically we're changing, if things fall through or go through like they are planning for them to go through, the New World Order changes every aspect of our lives. Basically, you know, I was getting angry at my thermostat because, you know, I'll set the thermostat at 74, y'all, because, listen, you know, it's hot in Texas, but I'll set the thermostat for 74. Well, 3 hours later when I'm falling asleep, the thermostat kicks itself back up to 80. And I said, I don't need a smart meter telling me what I need my thermostat on. But that's what you got with these new thermostats. And so basically we got something controlling everything we do. Whether that's the new automobiles that we drive, the new thermostats that we have in our homes, the new washers and dryers. You know, I was looking at new washers and dryers yesterday, and everything basically had all these components set in it where it can control this, it can control the amount of water that you put in because you don't need that much water. I mean, we really got to start paying attention to just how many things they're putting in place to control us. That is where we're headed. So as far as our kids, our meters, you know, I mean, our cars, they are putting things in place to determine how often, when, how much we use things. Does that make sense to anybody but me?
No, it makes sense, but see, when you look at that, you got to understand that when they do the test blackouts of areas, how much of everything that you do every day and everything that you use is computerized, is some electronic part that needs the brain to, you know, needs to be connected to something else to function.
Yeah.
Well, and two, like you're saying, demand, necessity, and want versus a need. There's some things that happen, even with these state or federal mandates. A lot of times, people really don't even get a heads up that they're getting ready to do this. Before you know it, just there's a law that's been enacted. But a lot of times, and more of recent, last 5 or 10 years, they are doing this more so because statistics tell them that by and large, even if it's something that's not in the best interest of the least common denominator or to the poorest person, pass it anyway, because the majority of people are probably either going to acquiesce and do it.
Yeah.
You're going to have a certain group that may protest, advocate against it, but in general, it's a bill of sale that usually people don't then protest against, and they starting off in Michigan, and I can guarantee you that that's going to move over a lot of states, and it's going to end up being at some point in time probably law, federal law, in all the states and the territories. But if people don't look at what's in their best interest, and if the leadership is not passing laws to do that, then we better say something about it and do something, because in a minute it's going to be in Illinois, it's probably going to be in Texas, or they're going to at least bring it up to try and see if they can get that law passed. So I mean, they passed it in Michigan. So, I mean, probably do a little bit more analysis and look to see what most of the people in Michigan think. But, you know, I would, for one in Illinois, I would be at the front line fighting this, because I don't believe in the totality of it. They didn't. I haven't heard any language that said in specific cases deemed because of this, this, or this. They're just saying blanket across the board. And with that being said, the state does not own my children. So, therefore, if it was a law, oh, no, I'd be right there in the room. But, and I'll say this, too. I believe that I've developed, and me and my wife have developed, a close relationship with our children, that even if they're doing something that is against my desires or what I taught them, I believe my children would come to me and tell me that they wanted to do something, even knowing that I wouldn't be in agreement with it, but they feel comfortable enough that they you know, I'd develop a relationship that they would come to me and tell me, hey, Dad, hey, I want to have sex, or hey, I'm pregnant, or this or that. They know our stance on it, but they also know if they happen to be in a situation that we taught them against, that we would still be there for them. So there'd be no reason for them to have to basically sneak or go hide and then go to a provider and tell a provider, because they can tell their parents. And their parents are going to love them and work with them irregardless.
That's it. I mean, because basically, you know, someone put a statement on this story and basically says, does this highlight how the state, primarily via the schooling system and the healthcare industry, is moving aggressively to curtail parental authority and set the precedent that the government is responsible for protecting the children from the parent? That's scary. Just to think about that, that's scary. Because why does the government feel that they need to protect the children from the parent? I mean, in some cases that may be, but I think that's a small, you know, group versus, you know, most parents trying to do the right thing for their children. You know what I mean?
Well,
but that's usually the case. It's a small number of people are willing to fight for what they think is right. The majority only reacts after the fight is over.
True. Or benefit from what the small group fought for everybody and got. It's crazy.
Remember the argument of taking prayer out of public school? It wasn't a lot of people up there doing that. It was just a group of people with a common goal to fight for that. And it was also trying to take "In God We Trust" off the dollar.
True. It's just, I don't know. For all those who's not paying attention, it's amazing to me how people can go week after week and they just don't get that things are changing so swiftly in front of us. I mean, all these little things that we're not speaking up on collectively, they are changing our world for the worse. Would y'all agree with that?
Yes, you know what? I definitely would, because the trend of things, for instance, here in Chicago, and I know a lot of other states, in the past, let's just say you had a social organization or a church organization, religious organization, that was passing out food to the homeless. They have vagrancy laws. They have trespassing laws that are specifically on the books for homeless brothers and sisters. And now in some states, let's just say you see homeless individuals and you want to go give them something to eat. If you're giving them
anything to eat in a particular area or zone, there are laws on the books that now make that illegal, and you can be arrested for that. Because what they're actually trying to is drive the homeless out, and in terms of no sympathy, no compassion, no care, and they don't want people to be participating in that. But there are some groups that are lobbying against that, saying, you know, it's unconstitutional, it's inhumane, you shouldn't be trying to do that. But these are the things, you know, today it's this, tomorrow it's that. And it's like AJ was saying, it's just like our culture is getting to the point where things are being dictated. And even though people know that they're not right, they're not even remotely morally right, even logically, there's a lot of people that see it and seem like they become desensitized, and they don't want to do anything about it. And it's just like the deer in the headlights, and they're just allowing the government and the leadership to just do it, and they're not doing anything about it. But now most of these things that the leadership and the politicians are passing, what people don't understand, by and large, it's not affecting them. This is something that they think is good for the people, but what they're really saying is that we're going to push this on the people, but it doesn't mean it's going to be on me and my family.
Yeah, yeah. And you're exactly right. Because typically, you know, when we look at the new law as far as, I guess everybody's calling it Obamacare, but I cannot think of the proper name for it. That say it. The people in Congress, the senators, they don't have to abide by the president, the vice president. They have different insurance, but we all have Obamacare. So it's like they have double standards. It's just what it is. Well, you know what, guys, listen, it's you know what? I keep forgetting to remind everybody what we're talking about. Listen, if you just tuned in, I'm Carrie Heiser, host. You're listening to Center Stage with Carrie, AJ, and Christopher as we talk about hot topics tonight. We're just talking about the stories and the headlines that caught our attention this week, things that we thought maybe you'd be interested in hearing about as well. We're talking about the shooting that took place at Seattle Pacific University. Basically, a school in California where they're talking to eighth graders about how far they've gone sexually. We're also going to talk about VA hospitals and how they're under fire lately for basically the way that they're attending to our veterans. We're going to talk about the 10 corporations that control almost everything that we buy. We're also going to talk about a father who called the police because he was not able to control his child. So he thought the best way to teach his child a lesson was to call the police and, I guess, scare the child into doing right. So we're going to talk about whether that was a good thing or whether that was a not-so-good thing. So, again, you're listening to Center Stage. I'm Carrie Hines, your host, and we're talking about hot topics. And, y'all, listen, tonight one story that struck me, too, and this one was just like, I really didn't know where to go with it. There's a school in San Marcos, California, where the sex ed class, basically in California they call it family life and health class, basically they have as part of the curriculum, which is crazy, that they, I guess, talk about, you know, sex with the kids. And I can get that to a point, but what happened with this particular school was that as part of a class, they asked the students to stand beneath signs, okay? And there were six signs in the room, and the signs read like this. Sign A said that the student had gone to the point that they smiled at whoever they were interested in. The second sign said they'd gone as far as to hug someone they were interested in. The third sign said, I kiss someone that I'm interested in. The fourth sign said, I've gone as far as above the waist. The fifth sign said, I've gone as far as below the waist. And the sixth sign said, I have gone all the way. Listen, y'all, was that appropriate or was that not appropriate for an eighth grade class?
But, Carrie, I signed a paper this year for my son in the eighth grade to take sex ed because they say, okay, the parents have to sign up. I didn't know what they were teaching in class, but I've talked to my son before, so I think if anything inappropriate was going on in class, they would know. But you really have to understand that it's a sign, and we have so many, I'm saying there's so many girls out there that just want to be loved, so they're willing to have a baby. They don't want a relationship. They don't want anything. They just want a baby. So I think it's appropriate to bring all this information out, but I don't know how to bring it out unless you go to some, you know, everything has to go to an extreme until you actually learn what the balance is. And I'm not in agreement with that. I'm just saying that how do we find out what the balance is without, you know, putting, like, the signs. To me, it's signs. It's not demanding that anybody pick one. It's saying these are the six signs. And when you explain it, that is every step that little boys go through, from not liking girls at all to smiling at them to writing.
No. I think I was not clear. Each student was asked to go and stand beneath one of the signs.
Okay.
So when you got to get up out your chair, go to the head of the class, and there are six signs posted up there, and you go stand under one that says how far you've gone sexually. Is that appropriate or is that not appropriate for an eighth grade class?
Well, and the other point I was giving to make is that I've also went to alternative schools to where they had pregnant 6th, 7th, and 8th grade girls to where I was doing creative writing.
Okay.
Something. So when you see both sides of it, I don't know where the balance is, but I know the conversation has to be out there.
But don't both of you all have children that are in that age range?
Yeah, that's what I tell you. I just signed the paper for my 8th grader to do it this past year.
Okay.
Today was the last day of school.
Well, and I mean, now I have three kids. I have a 15-year-old who's a freshman, and I have a 12-year-old daughter. I mean, the thing about that is I actually became more involved as my kids got older in the schools that they go to actually find out what type of curriculum, not just the sexual education curriculum, but all of their curriculum, because I wanted to have my finger on the pulse to understand the topics, and because some things have changed since I was in school, when I was in grammar in middle school and high school, but to understand that, because for instance, when girls, young ladies used to get their first menses, their first menstrual period, they had part of sex ed for young ladies, separate from the boys, what that was all about. How to care for yourself, the things that you needed to do, what's normal, what's not normal. Now, that was a good thing, but that's something also that usually was secondary because it was taught at home. Now, I know in a lot of cases, whether there's one parent or two parents, sometimes the changes of life, body-wise, don't always get taught. And sometimes maybe you have a single dad, and it may not occur, or it may occur, but the dad's not a woman, so you may not know how to explain it and so forth. But I think the first step is that parents need to get involved to know what they're teaching their kids, and it's specifically sex education. But the other thing is that this test that was done with the, I think the 7th and 8th graders that you're referring to, it would kind of depend on why they were doing it. I mean, was that done to shame? Was it just done to get a statistical consensus? And at the end of it, what is being provided for these individuals that basically went up and stood under these signs in terms of if they were already only 11, 12, and 13 years old, and they're talking about basically full-blown sex, that's a problem. And what is being provided in terms of counseling, in terms of nurturing, in terms of education? And I would think then I would want to be talking to that young individual if I was a teacher or person involved in that and say, well, have you talked to your parents? Are your parents approachable? You know, what's with this? Because sometimes this is where we get these young ladies, young men who are having babies having babies and so forth. So it is all relative, but I would want to know why they were doing it, and then at the end of it, if you're going to do this and then you get those responses, then what are you doing to affect trying to do something to educate these young individuals of what is appropriate or not? And I'll say this lastly. I think also, too, societal-wise, that we've gotten to the point where we don't want to say what we feel is morally right and morally wrong. Now, it doesn't mean just because I feel that this shouldn't happen to a certain age that that is what's going to happen. But people don't even stand on what they feel. They're almost like, well, if I say it, they ain't going to do it anyway. But if you live the life and you promote that, there's a higher likelihood that your child might mimic what you do versus you tell them one thing and you do something else.
Well, see, this is a problem I have, though, because, you know, I was in a school where a lot of girls were very mature for, I mean, we're talking about seventh grade, but because of my upbringing, I always had this image that my mother had put in my head that stuck, and it got me through high school because, you know, it was just she had this saying that she would say, anybody that brings a baby to my house has got to get out. And so that imprinted upon my brain the image of me walking with a suitcase in one hand and a baby on the other hip. And so in like 5 feet of snow, and I don't think Memphis has ever even had 5 feet of snow, but that was just, every time she'd say that, that was the image that popped in my head, and it worked. But aside from that, there was a lot of peer pressure, but the peer pressure my mama gave me at home was tougher than any peer pressure I felt at school. Now, that said, these kids that are put up under these signs where you go and you stand up under the sign that says, I'm only kissed up away, and then you see your girlfriend at the other end of the board saying she's going all the way, is that putting peer pressure on the kids where maybe they wouldn't have necessarily ever even known what the other people had done had this not come up in this class? So that said, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Adrian.
No, Carrie. I was just going to say that, see, with boys, seventh, eighth, ninth, whatever, with boys, I've been around boys that will claim that they've had so many girlfriends, slept with so many women. Girls would say the same thing, and they were still virgins. But the thing is, the peer pressure is the audible sound that they've done it. The truth is, who's done it, and they need help. So I'm saying until you can actually divide those two conversations and those two possibilities, it's hard to find where the possibilities lie if you don't have an open forum to where you can actually have them presented. Because a lot of people are probably still in the audible sign. Once the class pursued or whatever came next, it's like, well, I really hadn't, but I thought about it. We're drawing conclusions off of, you know, half the information, which is all right sometimes, but it's not a good way to present our full balanced, I guess, our balanced conclusion of the matter, basically.
Okay, we're going to go to the phone lines. We're going to see what 843-276 thinks about their child basically talking about how much sex they've had in the eighth grade. Good evening, 843.
Oh boy, hey, it's T. Smith. What's going on?
My guess is. Oh, sorry. Good evening. 843-276. You're on center stage.
Hey, it's Smitty. How's it going?
Hey, Smitty. How you doing?
No, hey, good. I'm good. I officially graduated from college finally, like Van Wilder here.
Congratulations.
Yeah, but yeah, that government stuff. But I heard y'all talking about, and I was gonna go off on another tangent, but the one y'all are talking about, the thing is, I know that just sex and stuff, and like you were talking, your mother taught that, you know, no babies in our house. The stuff affects girls and boys differently. And because, it, like, I don't believe in equality. I don't believe in fair. I believe fair is a place where they judge pigs. But the equality, because girls give birth, we can't give birth. Over 90% of the time, the woman has custody of that kid. That man doesn't, no matter how many so many of them fight. So let's look at these teenage girls. How many, I'm just talking about the girls right now, because we know the boy, they're going to be paying out the butt anyway with child support. We talk to these boys, these young bucks, and your other belt co-host here, he knows. We can talk to these boys all day, they're hard-headed anyway, you know. But I talk about a lot of times the girls, because they stuck. How many of these girls have been told by mama, I love you to death, but it was hard. You know, I love you, but we had to live in not ideal circumstances. The guy didn't put a ring on my finger. you are going to give up your childhood because I'm not raising your kid for you. I believe so many of these young people out here expect their young grandparent, their young parent, to raise their kids for them.
Yeah.
You know, and I believe the problem is that I'm not saying you got to make the kid feel like crap the whole time. But one, they need to know how life really works. Let them know how much money it costs for it. Because when I'm 35, I remember I was a small kid. There was no car seat. There were no booster seats. There weren't a myriad of doctor appointments or every little thing. Heck, when I was a kid, my dad could drive a beer with a beer in the car. You know, things change. Things get more expensive. Now you got daycare now that is like highway robbery. You know, you got all these price gouging kinds of medicine. And the problem is, what these kids don't understand is their parents are not obligated to help them out and raise their kids. Their parents are not obligated to do that. So many believe that, well, they don't want to see the kids suffer. I can still go out and party with my friends then. Oh, mama and uncle watch the kids for me. We have to show our kids tough love. We have to show these kids, instead of just talking to them, show them how it really hurts. Open those books up and show them how much money it costs to raise a kid. And I would ask the girl this. Let's say you mess with a 16-year-old boy, but then again we know a 16-year-old girl, we got 22-year-old dudes driving around to school. But even at that age, does he make enough money to take care of a kid? And I would say, God forbid, what if I drop dead right now? I can't take care of a kid. What are you going to do for that kid? No one ever looked.
So what you're saying is that you agreeing with the class? You think it's going to help the kid? Is that what you're saying?
I think kids going to do what they want to do anyway. But all you got to do is just put all the information out there. And see, the problem, I tell you what the big problem is. Parents don't want to act like that. They don't want the kids to look at them differently. I'd rather my kid look at me and say, yeah, Dad, you messed up. But guess what? We here and you're doing, and you're telling us the truth, not make the same mistakes, make the same decisions in life. Yeah, birth control is one thing, but what the financial impact of it as well in the time, in the stunt of your childhood? I'm done.
I'm agreeing with you. All of that goes with it, but, you know, I think we have to be careful who gives our children information. Because,
yep.
I mean, how many cases do we see now where the teachers are having sex with the children? I mean, we saw a story here in this local area this week where a teacher was accused of having sex with two different male students. She was a female teacher, had sex with two different male students within a short period of time. I mean, having sex with them in her car. So do you want some perverted person who happens to be a teacher to be teaching your child about sex education and then getting that much information about your child, you know, just by, I don't know, some of the classwork? I don't think so.
Mom and daddy should be teaching those kids, first and foremost.
On that instance, I think, see, we are so adaptable to the news. See, the news will pick out the slightest inference of some adverse thing that happened and make it sound like it's happening every day. So now we're in fear of our children walking across the street because somebody's going to drive by and take them, or we're in fear of our son being taught sex ed by a woman because she's going to take him, get a hotel room and teach him what sex ed is for real. You know, I think until the parents actually talk to the children straight up, you know, regardless of what's going on, we're going to always have a problem with it because parents want to cipher the information to their children when they think they're ready and understanding that they're probably already ready.
Well,
okay.
Go ahead. I was going to say the advent of hiding a candle under a bush is not going to work because a 10-year-old a 10-year-old that's unsupervised can go on the internet and Google anything and see anything, even porn, anything. So I think it's right. It is going back to that home training, home setting, and the church also used to be involved in that as well, and in terms of the community and the community and the village raising the community. But since kids have access to a wealth of things that a few years ago they didn't, we should really be planning on spending time from kids with our kids from day one. And then the second thing is we also have to ensure at the appropriate time, whether you're observing your kids, you're observing that maybe they're more interested in this or that, as I am doing with my 15-year-old now, you have to, I mean, now's the time that Christopher, I got to talk to him about the birds, the real birds and the bees, because I am sure, I'm not naive, that naive, that Chris has probably come across, not that he's been web surfing porn, but he's probably seen some things on the internet that he knows and he sees. So I need to talk to him about it to provide him, like the caller was saying, with the good moral information and let him know what I feel and my wife feels is appropriate. And then from there, I'm not going to lose any sleep over it, but what I'm going to do is be prayerful and just ensure that I did my best as a parent to model what being a good parent is, but also to also model sex, relationships, things of those nature, so that when Chris reaches that point where he's faced with that, Dad and Mom have equipped him as best as we can, and that's pretty much all that we can do. And we work with him, and we, once again, I want to stress, modeling so he sees that, and that's one tool, and that's one weapon, and then making sure that we talk to him, and so that he doesn't feel that Dad doesn't understand, oh, you know, Dad, you're old, you're fogey, this and that, so he understands. And I think that's a good, that's a good first and second tier of protection so that your child is at least equipped. And I think what happens is that in the schools nowadays, is that a lot of the children, and boys and girls, are not equipped. They're going on mythological information, and a lot of times they're not equipped. And so they are looking for, in some cases, relationships, or they're looking for love, they're looking for somebody to care about them, and they go about the wrong way of obtaining that.
Okay.
You know what?
Anybody, you were trying to chime in again and say what?
Oh, I'll say quick things. I like it. Good conversation, because y'all know I'm not a parent. But
right.
I tell my younger cousins a cold, hard truth. I got a female cousin started college a couple years ago, and I told her, I said, I can't tell y'all to have sex or not. I know y'all got the internet. First things first, parents got to be proactive. There are so many ways to access the internet now. You can access the internet from your video game console now, you know. So there are so many ways to access it, so parents got to be proactive. But I told her, these boys want to have you send them pictures? I'm going to show you what happens. Look at my phone. These girls send pictures. It ain't from me. My homeboy sent that to me. They're going to pass you around. And that's how they going to perceive you. They're going to perceive you as just a lay. Well, whatever you put on the internet, it's going to stay on the internet. And
okay.
I just believe that parents have got to come to grips. I'm not telling anybody to raise a kid, but I know most of the time a kid going to have sex regardless. A kid going to, you know, we can't forbid, and if I have a kid, I can't forbid my kid to have sex. But all I can do is give them the most information and tell them the truth about what happens if you make the wrong decision, be irresponsible. And I said this one quick thing real quick. I talked to my younger male cousin. I told him the truth. I said, look here, partner, you want to go in that girl by birth control. If she says she's on the pill, think she's, pretend she's lying. Could protect yourself. Because in many states, that child support is 25%, partner. And more, and look, you go like 23, 24 in some of these states, and they go to college. Do you want to be stuck with that woman? Because as soon as you ejaculate in her, unprotected, she's judged during execution of what decides what happened to that child. See, no one will tell you that. Everybody will tell you what feels good. But no one's going to tell you what really happens. And I tell them, I got friends right now who are dealing with this situation. And I always tell them that, you know, and I try to show them that. And plus, I don't have children, so they see where I'm coming from. And I just, like I said, my last thing, I just want people to just tell these. And I like the last brother said, he's telling his son the truth. And I would, if people's got to tell their kids the truth about what happens.
I agree. And, you know, I think the thing is, Peacemini, you and I neither have children, but I think people who do have children so often want to be their friend. They really
yep.
want to. Out to like them. And so they don't tell them the cold hard truth, and they don't want them to know that they made mistakes and things like that. So I guess, you know, that's where the school has that open door to teach your child for you, which I think, you know, is a bad idea, but it happens. Would y'all agree with that?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, the last thing I'm going to put on that is basically it was stated that I did not know this, that state-imposed public school sex education courses are promoted by organizations like Planned Parenthood. And basically what they said is they do little to discourage young children from engaging in sexual activity, but instead teach children perverted sex acts like sexual promiscuity, homosexuality, and anal sex. Did not know that. And then they said they gear them.
But Carrie, what's your source? Hold up. Before you continue, what's your source? Because there's some other sources out there that say something different.
Okay. Uh-huh. Infowars.com. Infowars.com. So, y'all blame Alex Jones on this one. And I should have quoted that, and I do apologize. Thank you for reminding me of that, AJ. But you know, there's, you know, Planned Parenthood has been under a lot of fire lately, you know, for a lot of things. And I'm not, you know, I'm quoting, and I should have, like I said, like AJ said, I quoted the source. But, yeah, that's what they're saying. So I don't know if I don't know. Planned Parenthood, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it gets a green light on some things because.
But Carrie, before you continue, I'm saying I've dealt with Planned Parenthood a lot. Everything I've dealt with, I've said, the things I've dealt with them on is completely opposite of what you hear the Republicans say and what they're saying in Texas, that they're promoting abortions and all this other stuff. So I think the more information you put out there, the less we have to track the origin of the information. So a lot of times it's perpetuating what was said in a negative fashion of a group that they're trying to get rid of.
Okay. I'm like, listen, I ain't going to take that one. I'm quoting Infowars.com. Y'all can go to their website and pick that story up. I think it was done by Paul Watson on that particular story. So I agree with you, AJ. There's two sides to every story, and then the truth.
Well, you know what, though? I mean, and I agree with that and checking sources and double-checking and cross-checking. But at the same time, I will say this. I know my wife has worked with Planned Parenthood in the communities, in the predominantly low-income, poor communities in Chicago. I don't, and I'll do my research, and I won't just go in here and say either. But I think there's a problem with any organization that has more influence to do with sex education, with abortion and so forth, that don't look like me, then look like me. So on the same hand, I do believe that it then does become not a conspiracy, but an agenda that you're going to have somebody who doesn't look like me more so dictate to me or get the funding to then basically promote in my community what they think is best. So, but then that goes back to people taking ownership and then people also being responsible. And I think, again, if people are concerned about sex education in school, if they're concerned about the increase in teen moms, pregnancies and so forth, to do a better job of not trying to hide that candle underneath the bush, we do have to dialogue this. We have to talk about it. But we have to also be involved, because if you ask the average parent, do you know what book, do you know what material that they're using to teach your kids, whether it's basic or sex education or about STDs, most don't know. And now that I'm PCS back to Chicago, along with my wife, and my wife has been checking and doing due diligence too, but we're going to get involved because we want to know. And then not just for us, we want to have discussions among other parents, because some other parents, we know they're probably not like we are, not that we're any better or any worse, but we are diligent in talking to our kids and ensuring that they have, well, again, the information. And I think in the black community, that's what's lacking. Nobody's talking to the kids about, you know, what's appropriate, what they should, what they shouldn't be doing, modeling that as well. And then trying to paint the picture to show them, hey, you have a baby, do you know what it costs? Do you know what that is going to mean to your life and what what you're going to have to do in some of your childhood that you're going to lose.
I 100% agree. And before we move on from Planned Parenthood, who founded Planned Parenthood? Wasn't that was it Margaret Sanger? Was that who founded Planned Parenthood? Okay, I don't remember, but I know that the person that did found Planned Parenthood or founded Planned Parenthood was someone who had a very interesting view on the population control. But anyway, we gonna move on. I won't go there tonight. So listen, if you just
how you gonna throw that sword out there and say, okay, we're gonna move on. I'll cut you right quick. But see,
I'm
the only
at the
point
combo.
I was making.
The
only point I was making is that there's so many entities right now under attack that we fall into the same verbiage as Sterling, where everybody say what they thought they heard, and that's what everybody's repeating. And that was my only fear is that, you know, we are a show of top quality. We're talking about hot topics, so we need to have every aspect of the issue out there so people can gravitate to which part, you know, they see and for them to understand their own facts. So I was just throwing it out there like that. I didn't want you to cut me with that sword.
Oh, no. I'm good. And listen, if you just tuned in, you come center stage tonight for a Hot Topics. We're talking about news stories that we saw across the country this week that caught our attention, just jumped out there at us, and we thought that we would share them with you tonight. So we've covered quite a bit of ground already. We talked about the fact that there's a new law, basically, that says that, you know, the nurse can pull your child aside when you take them to the doctor and spend 5 minutes with them asking them about what's going on in their life. And also, basically, eighth graders being asked about whether or not they've gone all the way sexually. And, y'all, something just jumped in my head as I was just recapping that. Just going back to the medical situation again. Okay, with all of these, and y'all, this just hit me like a ton of bricks. With all of these shootings, when your child is going into the doctor's office and that nurse is spending that 5 minutes with your child, what if the doctor or the nurse is asking your child about their mental state? Okay, is that information that you want disclosed without you being present? I'm just putting that out there. With all of these school shootings and all these kids that are somehow getting caught up in all these situations where, you know, allegedly they're shooting up things, do you want your child going to the nurse and telling them, you know, mentally I'm not so stable or whatever without you being present? Just putting it out there. Okay, we're moving on, y'all. But anyway, we want to talk about, again, we're talking about shootings, segueing over into the shooting that happened at Seattle Pacific University on Thursday. Basically, a lone gunman, Aaron Ybarra, went in shooting, and basically he was shooting at students. And what happened was when he stopped to reload, one of the building monitors was able to get his pepper spray out, sprayed him with pepper spray, and then was able to subdue him. And some other people came to assist him, and they were able to basically get control of him until the police or authorities got there. And I understand one person was killed, another person was critically injured, and I think another person was hurt as well. That said, I'm trying to get my notes correct on how many. I think two other young people were hurt, and one was killed. That said, again, you know, it's just information that you have to be very careful about discussing your mental state or anything else with anybody, especially with your parents not being present and you're a kid. But with this particular young man at Pacific University, Seattle Pacific University, in this shooting, you know, again, we talked about this last week. What is going on with all of these shootings in safe zones, churches, synagogues, you know, places where we don't expect military bases, places where we don't expect, you know, elementary schools, places where we don't expect shooters to come on to? You know, again, is this an agenda by somebody to scare us all into giving up our guns? I mean, I don't know. I'm just putting it out there. What do y'all think? Is it possible?
I don't I wouldn't put it past it, but as far as the loss of life and loss of innocent life, I don't think it's a tactic or something led by somebody else. I think we have so many mimics out here that people see something and they think they want to get some off their chest and let somebody know that they're feeling bad or stressed out. So it actually affects more people than them. And I think it's wrong to do that, but, you know, it's kind of hard to understand how anybody could just do that and it's all right. I don't know. I'm baffled at the fact altogether. I don't even know how to explain that because it's happening too often now.
It is happening too often. Christopher.
Well, and true, and it's such an alarming rate and so forth, and I agree. But I think when these cases unfortunately happen, I think when it would do a great service if we peel back the layers of the onion in terms of not only the individual, mental health, on medication or not on medication, undiagnosed or diagnosed and so forth, we also, you know, we can look a little bit at motive. But I think it's important to look at the processes that these individuals went through to gain these weapons, whether they were knives or guns or automatic, semi-automatic, and see if there's any kind of linking pattern in terms of how the people purchased these and then what they basically maybe if there's any observable traits that you could see, because this that information is important, and even with all that done and said, it doesn't mean that you're still going to be able to anticipate or predict when any given individual may do that. And like AJ was saying, a lot of this can also come from people mimicking. They see this, and now they want their 5 minutes of fame and so forth. So it's difficult, even when it happened at Fort Hood and the shootings and so forth. But I think when you look at that, most individuals do have a degree of mental illness. And also, you can also look at, I know here in Chicago, part of the issue with different crimes, whether they be nonviolent and particularly when they're violent, when Chicago closed, I think they closed like four of the outpatient mental health clinics. Now, I go attend some of the CAPS meetings here with the policing and everything, and they basically give out factual statistics in terms of burglaries, robberies, shootings, murders, homicides, so forth and so forth. I dare say that those went through the roof when these clinics were closed down, because that meant that the people who were low income or the people who depended on that health care for medication, for therapy and so forth, couldn't get it and then had to travel 20 to 30 miles north or go to a county hospital and so forth. Those individuals started to become noncompliant. Even though the medication was free, it could have been an issue of them having funds or resources to get there. But I usually connect mental health with these individuals that are doing these things. And usually when you look into it, you usually will find some element of an individual that probably was noncompliant on medication. In a lot of cases, it could just be that, like AJ was saying, they may be mimicking some of these things. But there has to be some way to at least look at the element of these shootings and these individuals carrying out these acts. But, again, as I said before, we know predominantly how it's happening and who the individuals that are exacting this is white males. But that's not just the answer to then try and put together a hypothesis of why is it happening. What can we do to try and combat this and so forth? It's difficult because it's not really any one thing you can put your finger on the pulse.
And that's the thing. That's the thing. There are always copycats, but at the same time, there would have to be an awful lot of copycats for this to be, you know, this many. I mean, we've had, you know, an enormous amount of school shootings, military installation shootings, you know, just, you know, a bunch. I mean, we got them at the Boston Marathon. We got them at the elementary school. We got them at, you know, military installations. We got them at, you know, universities. It's just a bunch. So everybody, I don't know, I don't want to say that I believe everybody's a copycat.
But it's not any commonality. There's no common link that you can to actually make it seem like, you know, this is under one group that's doing this, or one particular entity is trying to make this point, because it's happening in such, you know, it's on the West Coast, but it was low, in the lower region of the West Coast before, you know. So it's
what I told you. The common denominator is they're hitting safe zones, places where people would consider themselves safe. And second of all, is it an agenda to take all of our guns?
Well, to me, it started when the I can't think of the lady's name that was a senator,
mm-hmm.
when she was in the public in Arizona. I think it was in Arizona where she was shot in the public place.
Oh yeah, Gabby Gifford.
Yeah, it started there, because after that there were other shootings, and then it was schools, and then it was, you know, people just walking in the schools. So now the schools, I don't really know what agenda it could be promoting, because there's so many entities that need to be safe and need to hire more security and need to hire more policemen. And so I don't really know. Or we need different gun laws. Couldn't be the NRA trying to say if everybody had a gun, it wouldn't happen.
No, I don't think it's the NRA. I think it's the government saying we want you to give up your guns. But I'm not going to go there tonight. keep it moving. But I'm just saying, it's just awfully ironic that there's a push, you know, for us to, you know, give up assault weapons. And the problem with that is, I think whenever you start saying okay to something that's a right, I think you have to be very careful, because, you know, when you say assault rifles have been banned, and so what are they really speaking to? And so we're not talking about that tonight, so I'm not even go there, because I will get on a soapbox and I won't get off. So I'm not, because this is the thing I feel. I think we're living in a world, and I'll just say this and I'll move on. I think we're living in a world today that I would feel very unsafe if someone said everybody has to give up their guns, because we know the bad guys are not going to give up their guns. The police are not going to give up their guns, and there's a lot of other groups that are not going to give up their guns. So all that's going to be left unprotected are those that like us who comply, and so we're just left like sitting ducks, you know, waiting to be picked off, and I just think that's unfair. But, again, that's just my soapbox, and I'm going to leave it alone.
Well, Karen, wait a minute. here's the other thing to that. What people also have to realize is that whenever a 911 call happens, and that's dispatched to a police, whether they're at the station, in the field, or they're on their beat, and they pick that up, I can tell you in Chicago, I know for a fact, because I've experienced it, and this is going back to the gun or turn your guns in, or the overall general public doesn't need to have weapons, because it just creates where you have senseless shootings like this and people get killed. My issue, and I am actually, I'm very much in agreement with you, that I believe that it is some, maybe not a, these individuals were used or brainwashed into that, but I do think that it is an agenda to get people to think that they don't need to have a weapon, or they don't need to consider that. Because in Chicago, when that 911 calls come in, that police officer, based on where the call is coming from, they can determine and make their mind up if they're going to respond to it immediately or if they're going to wait 5 or 10 minutes and then respond. I was coming out of a rental apartment that had just been broken, into. The police were there. I locked the building up and went to go get a few more locks to further secure the building. Came back to the building, went in the building, was securing the doors, and someone came back to the building while I was there and was proceeding to steal stuff, the plumbing and so forth. I eased out. I didn't have my weapon with me. I eased out, and I called the police. Now, the district was a half a mile up the street. Now, I called 911. The police waited for 15 minutes before they responded. Now, that wasn't by mistake. That was by design, because they didn't plan on coming to try to apprehend or have to get into it with nobody. Then after they drove away, the police drove up and then said, did you get the license plate? Now, Now, I would have been wrong if I had my weapon to protect myself. Then I would have been in the wrong. But I was just a law-abiding citizen trying to basically lock up a building that had been vandalized. And so you see the implications? And so what the police say to me is that till we get there, then you good. But if you can't, you on your own.
You know, that happens. And people don't realize that they are not there to protect you. The sooner you get it, they do not. If you call them and tell them they're breaking in right now, good luck. They may or may not show up.
Yeah. And I told them there's a crime in progress. And this, we'll send somebody right over. Yeah, right. So I just want people to, the reality is that I'm fortunate. I live in a diverse neighborhood. That's nice, and the police respond fairly quickly. But that's not, and at some point, the police may decide, based on what is going down, that they're not going to respond right away.
That happens. I mean, that just happens. I mean, wake up, people. It happens. And I think I don't know. I really don't know how. You know, I think the light bulb came on a show when someone said the police are not there to protect you. I said, sure they are, because that was my first instinct, is that the police are there to protect you. And then the person went on to explain, no, they respond to crime. They are not there to stand guard over you and protect you from being a victim of crime. And when that light bulb went on, boy, I realized, well, there's nobody left to protect me but me. So why would I then be comfortable with giving up my guns if the police are not there to protect me? You see what I'm saying? It's a catch-22. And so people who are just on board for this, give up your weapons, and everybody just, you know, feel like we're going to be okay, that's just crazy because, again, they are not there to stand guard to protect you. They are there to respond to crime. Anyway, I'll leave that right there.
Let me say really quick, and AJ can probably attest to this. I can tell you, being over in Iraq and Kuwait, it was in Saudi Arabia, it is very common for the average citizen to be carrying an automatic weapon. But you don't hear about mass shootings. You don't hear about a lot of things that's basically being carried out because it is in their culture, and it is accepted. And the bad guys know that the citizens will use their weapons, and they don't play. So if what has been going on in this country with the elevation in crime and violent crime and gun violence and so forth is how it is, how is the average law-abiding citizen not having a weapon going to help those statistics come down? So them having weapons can't hurt.
I agree.
AJ, you don't agree? AJ Houston. I think we have lost AJ on AJ's line again. AJ, call back in. Some kind of way we're having trouble with AJ's line. But with this shooting, y'all, we're going to go back. Okay, you know what? Because y'all going to get me on the soapbox, and I'm trying not to go there tonight. With this Seattle Pacific University shooter, basically they said he had additional rounds and a knife. And basically, they said that the guy wasn't even the gunman, Mr. Aaron Yabara. He wasn't even a student there. So I'm not even sure what he was so angry or disgruntled about, because basically they said that this guy was a happy, super happy and friendly guy. So not even sure what's going on. They said that he had just started a new job bagging groceries, and he had a great support group of, like, friends that really thought he was a super guy. And so they really don't even know what the motive or what his target was. So you just wonder, like, with all these shootings, why would someone who's happy and considered to be a very friendly person and super happy, why would they go and shoot, just randomly shoot people? That just really doesn't make any sense. You know, but one thing I noticed in driving in traffic here, everybody's so angry. You know, everybody's just ready to just, you know, do damage. So I don't know, maybe there's a lot of mental illness going on or something, but there's no clear motive. You know, his family isn't speaking. You know, his friends have not said anything other than he was a super happy guy and he was friendly. So nobody seems to know what was going on with Mr. Aaron Yabara and why he said what, AJ?
So every week we're talking about McCarran candidates, huh?
I don't want. That's why I didn't go there this week. Listen, I may be living next door to one. I don't know. I don't know what. I just think it's awfully coincidental that they're coming so fast and furious.
I'm in agreement with what I'm saying, but after the story was going on, I'm like, this is back to the McCarran candidate, you know, conversation that we had, because it was people acting opposite of their usual actions.
Oh,
and what would cause that?
Very good question, and I don't know. Because, you know, the thing is, you know, I think I'm having a problem with all these people randomly killing people who haven't done anything to them. You know, I think last week, the guy out of California, the director's son, he did at least, you know, leave a video and said, this is why I did it. But most of them, you don't see. You know, so that's just, you know, where that is. Okay, y'all, listen, if you just tuned in, you come Center Stage tonight. We're talking about hot topics. It's Carrie, AJ, and Christopher, and we're just chopping it up, talking about the stories that jumped out of jumped off the pages at us as we read them this week. Different stories from across the country. We just weekly try to go and pick out the ones that we thought were most interesting or the ones that we thought, you know, basically our audience would like to hear us talk about. And so last week I think we intended to talk about a subject Christopher brought, and I overlooked it, and we're going to pick it up this week, and that's the situation with the VA hospitals being under so much fire. Basically, they've been rated very poorly lately for appropriately attending to the medical needs and psychological needs of our veterans. Christopher, what is going on with that?
Well, you know what? This particular case has some it has some residue from a few years ago with Walter Reed, with some of the I guess I will say mismanagement, and certain things where money was not utilized appropriately, and thereby led to a decrease in patient care, a decrease in access to care, and then also a decrease in service members who should have been receiving certain types of care, primary care, specialty care. And at Walter Reed, it was because of individuals that were actually hospitalized for a certain length of time that were not allegedly getting the appropriate care that they should be. With the VA, as of current, a lot of it from me being in the system in terms of I don't see patients in the VA, but I do volunteer time to time at the VA. And just from working and friends, medical providers and clinical psychologists that work in the VAs and here in Chicago and Indianapolis, I personally think just it was some of the mismanagement and the allotting of what full benefits that military service members should get and that they should be getting under their particular VA claim or their disability and or into retirement. Some of this stems from lack of information. For instance, my dad's a Korean War veteran, 85 years old, and I didn't know until a few years ago that my dad had received the Purple Heart. During that time in the 50s and 60s, a lot of servicemen and women that were coming back from the battlefield didn't have some of the things that are in place now in terms of when they demobilize and they come off active duty and they get a specific administrative and a medical screening, psychological screening, to know if they have any issues or if they come off orders and then they need the care later on, how to access it, where to go, the information, the numbers, those point of contacts. But my dad's case, I didn't know at the time that my dad had been injured and that he had received the Purple Heart. Well, when I found out he did, is that we got my dad an appointment at the VA. And immediately, when the VA saw him within a week, they had him back at the VA, had him going through specialty care, and had found out that the injury where my dad was received shrapnel in his knee, that they then gave him disability. And they made it go back only so far retroactively. Now, I said all that to say is because at the time he came off orders back in the late 50s, he should have been receiving disability pay. So he didn't know that. So fast forward to just, 2 years ago, now they picked up and he's receiving disability pay. But that's because he didn't know, and the system really wasn't designed to identify that. Part of the problem that the VA is having today, and, you know, done research and stuff, but I know firsthand, is they have to have the right people in place that actually care about the veterans and that they're ensuring that each of these facilities are efficient in providing the care that is required, that they're not, you know, passing the buck, that because, see, in the VA system versus the regular civilian system, things work similar in terms of that being a medical facility, but in some ways they work differently. Because when you go into the VA and you see providers, based on the disability that you're being seen for, that's covered 100%. So if you need an MRI for that particular condition, 100%, you get that. There's no cost associated with it and so forth. But in the civilian world, you may need the same thing, but if you don't have enough insurance, or if you don't have any insurance, you may not be able to get that at that given facility. But a lot of this, if money's mismanaged, if the leadership is not really keeping their finger on the pulse in terms of what's happening, then people at lower levels, they can do all kind of stuff. Then before you know it, you have a lot of veterans and individuals that are complaining because they're not receiving care, or the care that they're not receiving ends up making them sicker, if not dying, because they didn't receive, whether it was medication or treatment. So it's something that has to be taken very seriously, because not just because people are getting worse off as time goes on, but a lot of veterans that were being denied care were dying. And it was traced back to that they didn't receive their appropriate care in a timely fashion.
You know, it's weird because, you know, we see the Iraq War, the, you know, what we did in Afghanistan, and, you know, we know Korean War and the Vietnam War, and all of these young men went and sacrificed their lives to protect us, and you would just think when they come back, you know, we would at least have facilities in place that would address every medical issue that they had. That's the sad part.
Well, true, and there should be there should be no homeless veterans, men or women. There should be no veterans that is starving, that is having significant problems and so forth. But there should also be, I think there needs to be a better open door policy to look at veterans with legitimate issues that want help. If they don't want help, a lot of times you can't make them. But the ones that require help, and it may require a consultation, it may require them having a case manager, whatever the case is, there just needs to be more emphasis put on this. I mean, if you're paying individuals to do their jobs, whether it's medical, whether it's the administrators and so forth, then they need to make their money, and they need to do the things that are required based on the VA regulations and the federal government regulations to ensure that that is happening. And right now in Chicago with a lot of the homeless veterans, not by choice, and in terms of veterans that should have access, but then you got to ensure that the hospitals also make sure that they have those outlying clinics to also make it convenient for the veterans as well. And I do know they've opened a considerable amount of vet centers across the nation, and there are some things that the federal government is doing to save that off. They've done some other things, too, with even reservists to allow them to have affordable care, TRICARE Reserve Select. So there are some things being done on the good side, but this latest thing, I mean, when a mistake like that is made, nobody needs to sugarcoat it. They need to admit what the problems are. They need to put it on the table, and then I think they need to work through the resolution in the best interest and timely to take care of servicemen and women.
Great. AJ, you
want to
chime in on this VA scandal?
No, well, I think Chris covered the bulk of it, you know. So I don't want to repeat after him, but I'm not to be a Chris. I'm not to co-sign on his information right there.
And I do too.
tell you, they could pay me a third of what they paid the director of the VA, and I believe that I could do the job that would be required to get the overhaul of the VA system and weed out the individuals that are a drain, that are getting paid but not doing the work, and then, unfortunately, some of the corruption that exists. I've always felt this way in the military, and friends of mine have, some of them did get caught up in contracting scandals and different things while we were deployed. But first of all, it's not just the money. It's the public trust, not the trust from the politicians and the leadership. I'm talking about the trust of the American people, because I'm in situations in terms of having certain amounts of authority that come, and I feel that it's come not just by my commander-in-chief, but the taxpayer. So I always want to make sure that I'm within a confines of due diligence and morality when I'm making decisions and when I'm utilizing the taxpayers' money. But sometimes that gets lost in the minutiae ocean, and individuals get beyond themselves, and in a sense they begin to smell themselves, and they don't think of it like that. So I think if you have the honor, the duty, the commitment, you want to do the right thing. And myself, even when someone would tell me, hey, if I got this contract while we were over here and I was working as a contracting officer representative, not that I wasn't tempted, but I also knew that I wasn't willing to destroy my credibility and the public trust as an Army soldier and Army officer representing the United States people. So I think and people don't want to talk about that, but part of the problem as well is the corruption, because I'm told about ungodly amounts of money that are mismanaged, people doing things they shouldn't be doing, and a lot of those people shouldn't just be easily and able to resign. They should be tried, and they should be convicted and sent to jail.
I agree. You know, and the thing is that this isn't the first time the VA has come under fire for this. You know, so it's like, why do they have to keep being reminded to take care of our veterans? I don't get it. I don't know. I mean, when you see it's sacrifice. Say what, Christian?
But it's the leadership that they see. Some of these, let me give you this quick example. Let's take a church. We got a pastor who's been a pastor of the church for 50, 60 years. Before they die, they go grab their son, who ain't been nowhere around the church, or daughter, and bring them in and say, you're going to be the pastor. Well, that may not be the best choice. That may be a choice, but not the best choice. So who do you consult other than yourself if you don't consult the board or the church members to see who they want to bring in? You see, a lot of these key positions in terms of director of this, director of agriculture, and so forth, sometimes they put them through some confirmation and this and that. But do they really look at, is that person the best person? Some of these people, not to say you have to have had military experience, but it would help if you're choosing somebody to be the director of the VA. And not saying this individual did not. What I'm simply saying is that sometimes, other than the confirmation, are they really looking at this person is in the best interest? They're going to do due diligence, do the best job. I think some of these positions at the national and the local level, it's nepotism. It's not with a concern that you're actually there to make the VA system as efficient and as best as you can. And I think that's part of the problem that ends up with more problems creeping up, corruption, and so forth. I don't think in a lot of these cases that the right individual or individuals are being put into place. So this is going to become rhetorical. Okay, now the next person that you're going to put in, now that the director has basically stepped down or been behind the scenes fired, what happens now?
I agree. And you know, and the thing is, I think every time I see these stories with the VA, I don't think I see a proper conclusion to the story. It's like we'll hear it and it's in the spotlight, but I don't think I ever walk away with they resolved it. You know what I mean? It just doesn't seem like when the VA here came under fire, I don't think I ever saw a proper resolution.
Well, the director is basically pressured. The director immediately or at some point makes a resignation, steps down. They go find somebody else, put them in. It'll go good for a while, and we're going to end up having this conversation again.
That's what I'm saying. It never says – they never come back and say everything was fixed. Like you say, they'll move the chess players, but in terms of the problem being fixed, you never get that everything was resolved. Because, you know, one person can always walk in behind another person and say, you know, I had a lot of stuff to clean up, so, you know, I've been spending this last 6 months just cleaning up. But then when do you get to a point where you're doing something moving forward? And that's what I never see with these stories, but, you know, hopefully
we'll
have
Carrie, I'm just a soldier, and I know what's wrong, so I don't put it past Congress or anybody else not to know what's wrong as well. The question is, are they going to do what it's going to take to correct the wrong?
I agree, and I hope they do. And let's just let's just hope, you know, with this particular scandal this time, because it's just too many of our soldiers coming back, you know, with, what is it, PTSD, you know, I mean, limbs, you know, blown off, you know, all types of issues going on, and it's just not fair to bring them back to a bad economy, you know, and medical conditions that are not being addressed too. It's just wrong. It's just what it is. You know, no jobs and no, you know, proper medical care. It's just wrong. But, okay, y'all going to give me another soapbox, and I don't want to go there. Okay, y'all, listen, again, we're down to our last 20-some-odd minutes in the show. If you just tuned in, you've come Center Stages. We're talking about hot topics like we do most weeks. But we're talking about the top headlines that just jumped out at us this week, things that we saw that made us say, And so we thought we'd bring them to you tonight. One of the things that jumped out at me was that 10 corporations control almost everything we buy. That was shocking to me. I don't know. I thought the net was bigger for some reason. I just was not aware that it's just 10 that basically control everything we buy. And those 10 are Coca-Cola, Kraft, PepsiCo, P&G, Kellogg, Johnson & Johnson, Nestle, Mars, G, I'm assuming that stands for General Mills, and Unilever. That's it. And pretty much these people are controlling almost everything we buy. And I was thinking as I was preparing the story, and you can get this information off of Reddit.com, that's spelled R-E-D-D-I-T.com. And as I was looking at that, I said, why in the world would the 99% allow the 1% to come together and control or monopolize the market like that? And the 99% is just basically, I mean, we're not controlling anything, and we're letting 1% control everything. That's just crazy. We're just consumers. While 1% makes all the money, that's crazy. If the 99% got together and worked with each other, like the 1% works with each other, can you imagine where we would be?
But there you go with that togetherness concept again. Now, just imagine, Carrie, in the next few years, all we're going to have is Walmart, Winco, and Costco. All the other stores are going to be non-existent because they're building a store on every block, running the mom-and-pop business, running even individual businesses out of business. So until we actually know, now that you notice this, let's notice it even more in our own community.
That's crazy. And, you know, years ago, this was in the, this would have had to be, well, I don't want to date myself, but let's just say years ago, when Samsung first came on the scene, I worked for them in their membership department, when you had to actually have a company to be a member, or you actually had to work for, like, the city or the county or some big company, you know, like, you know, GM or something like that. Well, that said, I went to a small business to ask this person, because business owners could be, you know, could have memberships. And I went into this business, and I was trying to sell this man a membership because I was a rep in the field. And this man almost, I thought he was going to get the gun at me. I'm serious. He was so mad when he started telling me about how Sam Walton was running people out of business. And I couldn't understand. He had a small tire shop. And I couldn't wrap my mind around what he meant. I thought, what do you mean? How is Sam Walton affecting your business? But down the road, fast forward, I understand what he meant. And I didn't understand. He was a Caucasian man. And he turned very red. He was backing me out of the door, telling me, hell no, he would not buy a membership from Sam Walton, and that Sam was running him and other people out of business. And I couldn't understand what he meant. Because I thought, well, you're taking this awfully personal, sir. But now I see what he meant. And so I agree with you, AJ. It's really getting scary that we're allowing the market to be cornered by just a few people, and we're not paying attention to, if we're not patronizing with some of the smaller businesses, eventually they will just disappear.
The scary thing about that is that, with, like you said, when we only have the Walmart, the Costco, and those kind of companies in our neighborhoods and our communities, the other thing people have to realize is that once someone corners the market and they control, because they not only sell you the product, but they make the product, manufacture the product, and they also ship the product. Once they get that autonomous control, they can then dictate price. So
yeah.
Walmart is good, but what if people notice, Walmart starts out, Costco and all of them, any major Fortune 500 company, they start out promising a whole bunch to get their foot in the door in terms of a community, because most of them have to, you know, get the alderman, get the city council and so forth to allow them to come in. But ultimately, what they do is they usually come in with a 4, 5, 6 year free tax base, and they promise 300 jobs. Well, and they promise that 70% of them will be 40 hours or more, benefits and all that, but they don't say how long. And usually within a handful of years, they've reduced most of that 70% to 35 or 40% of only full-time individuals. Everybody else is 30 hours or less, and usually is not eligible for full benefits or no benefits at all. So, and then they're taking money from the community that they give a few trinkets, a million here or there, but the majority of the money is not coming back to the community. So people need to understand we don't have some kind of socioeconomic engine or will in our community that we are at the table when they then raise the prices on a tire or on a gallon of milk and so forth, and they're the only game in town because nobody else can afford to go against them, then people, it'll be far too late possibly, but then people will start to see the writing on the wall.
I agree. They said basically that most products we buy are controlled by just a few companies, and that particular thing is called the illusion of choice. So you all can Google the illusion of choice. But they said that Unilever basically produces everything from Dove soap, to Klondike bars. And then basically the Nestle company, it has a big stake in L'Oreal, which features everything from cosmetics to diesel designer jeans. So these people are not just one product wonders. These people are producing everything, and we're buying everything from them. It's like Christopher said, you know, they're calling the shots. I mean, until we realize that, it's over. I mean, it is just over.
What they've done, Gary, is just like Dr. Dre. He sold his Beats Audio, basically the patent, for $3.2 billion last month.
Wow.
So the thing is these companies come in and wait and see who's profitable. Then you go and buy the profitable companies. And a lot of times they don't change the management because they want you to be owned by them but still want you to make the money you were making before so that percentage is coming to them. So a lot of the companies, they gobble up in the process. Just like if you remember Windows, you know, Bill Gates was making so much money that Mac was about to go out of business.
Mm.
He loaned Macintosh money because he knew the market would be better when there's two options. But Mac also created the dual drive where you can run Windows on Mac.
Mm. Yeah. The thing is, what is the rest of this doing while we're letting, you know, just a few monopolize everything?
We're trying to pay our light bill, trying to put some gas in the car. and the prices go up. See when the electric company can go to the government and say, look, it's a lot more people need electricity, so we need to go up a couple of cents per kilowatt. Then gas say we need to go up a couple of cents per gallon. Then oil comes and say we're gonna still get these free billions, even though we've been the most profitable entity in the United States in the last 10 years, still getting free money from the government. But all these things occur unbeknownst to us because we're hustling trying to survive. Because
you
if you notice,
what?
The people that have
The people that have money, Kerry, don't have to buy nothing. People that have money get cars with zero interest. They get cars with zero interest. They get things given to them. You go to the bank, they give you money from the bank just because you open an account. You go to the bank, they say, well, you got a bad credit rating, so we don't know if you can have an account here with us.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to get
mm-hmm.
a job. If you got a bad credit rating, you can't get a job because they say, we don't know if you're going to start stealing from us because you got bad credit. So
mm-hmm.
what? Well, it's a bad credit thing. Well, and that's part of the problem with the capitalism and how it is run. Some of the individuals that were steeped in the capitalism are also delving into imperialism, and that's even far worse. Like AJ's saying, in terms of people. Kind of asleep at the wheel, but they're busy with the reality of hustling, making the money, paying the bills. But here's some of the things I often go back and say. There's certain things we can blame on the corporations and politics and our leadership, but there's some things we cannot. The thing is that I may need a car today, but I don't need a new car. And if I put myself in the position of watching the commercials and all the subliminal messages where I then buy into certain things, then I have to be careful and make sure that I'm making the right decision. But I think also what happens is that some cultures have unity, and some
yes.
cultures even purchase, get their own, look, unbeknownst to the Latino Hispanic community, you know, some of them own banks, and they loan money to each other. They start off little, and then, like, they have, like, a Chase, or they have a Bank of America or a Fifth Third branch, that now they have access to capital because they, when they didn't have, and they all lived in one house and all went to work and then saved money, and then another person bought a house. So now they're actually gaining, and then they're becoming a socioeconomic force. And what's happening, I know, in the black community that could be better is if we would stop driving our wealth and wearing our wealth and actually have some wealth. So you got a nice car. I was dropping Chris off at the train station. I saw a family that had a 2010 XLX Escalade and a 2014 Escalade. But they're living in a trailer that's dilapidated and falling down. So both those cars together is like $80,000.
And no place to park them.
But Chris, when you're talking about the bank.
They got $80,000 cars and no place to park them.
Yes.
Yeah. But when you're talking about the banks and all other things, see, a lot of times when you have new Americans to come to America, they can get a no-interest loan or a low-interest loan when we can't get a loan, and we've been living in America. So if you can get a loan and start something, see, a lot of times all we need is starter cash to get to where we're going.
Right,
but they
right.
want us to put they want to charge us 23% interest or like a payday loan on the starter cash, so we're hustling trying to pay back the starter cash so we can't save no money.
Well, that's true. But when we get black individuals that are in the position that can make it far better in the black community, i.e. a Magic Johnson, a Dr. Dre, I can guarantee you they will allow them to have $10 billion or $10 trillion as long as they don't open no bank and loan money to black.
Well, I'm saying that might be a stipulation in the contract.
Well, that's true, but what I'm saying is that I don't often say, oh, well, you know, the entertainers, the athletes, these famous people, they should be doing more in the black community. They should be loaning us money. What I say is, what are we doing? Okay, there's a lot of things that we can do that's not like a pyramid scheme. I mean, if I'm a little better off than my brother over here, and in all honesty and I think fairness, if we could actually establish something that we won't go as much as possible any further in debt, we're going to try and actually become debt-free, Because some people say, well, you know, I have a 30-year mortgage, but I'm going to try and pay it off in 15 or 20 years so I can save that interest. But if we would work on something or provide information and workshops and different things, at least so that the people would have the information and they're not operating based on myth but actual facts, a lot of people could possibly be in a better financial situation. And even if we don't have enough money to establish a bank, we may at least be able to do a round table and help each other get out of debt so at least, in a sense, we don't have as much financial baggage as the next person, and that then we may be good or be able to have some financial freedom and liberality to do something for someone else. Because at this point, people are still saying, athletes in the same as long as they, well, they ain't been, most of them haven't been doing anything for years. I don't expect them to, because they're, like you said, they may be in a contract, but most of them are almost brainwashed that way. So
but
we
think,
have to
I don't think it's brainwashing. I think most of them only use education as a means and method to attain that particular goal. So they didn't actually get the education.
Oh, I see.
You know, because you have a lot of people, I'm saying, I stay with my sons and we watch interviews by different athletes. And,
okay.
And I cringe when, like Chris, I can't think of his name, Chris played with Tennessee. He was the leading rusher and won MVP. We had over 2,000 yards. He was on the ESPYs. And when he got to make his speech, I was saddened by his ability to even speak the language he called English.
Oh, wow.
And I feel bad for us as a people with just him speaking.
Wow.
And then there's other instances to where these people sign these $100 million contracts, and they help their friends and help some family. So as long as you're helping somebody, they feel like they've helped because they didn't learn what the community was, what the village was. So it's not on them. Their conscience is clean. While
okay.
we struggle and we see the potential that they have in making things better in the community that they came from, but now they live in this big gated house that's a community of its own. And they don't really travel outside of it because everybody wants something they see.
I see. Okay.
Well, okay, y'all, we're going to hit one more topic before we get out of here tonight. Listen, where did the 2 hours go, y'all? Listen, they just went by so fast. Well, I want to talk about this one story where I saw this father on the Internet who had the police brought in because his son looked like he was about 9. He was just cutting up, I guess, or something. They didn't really give all the details. But he wanted to teach his son a lesson, I guess, to kind of scare him. So he brought the police in to, like, scare the child, so they put him in handcuffs, and I guess they took him and put him in the car, maybe drove him around the corner, I don't know. But do y'all think that's just like sending out the wrong message? Or is it
well,
just
Terry, now let me tell you the personal story. See, we can talk about that story, but let me tell you the personal story. My son right now, he's 24 years old. He's a sergeant in the military station in Kentucky. But before all that, when he was 16 and 17, he would go out and not come home when he was supposed to, and I had him living in the garage for about 3 weeks. The way he can come in the house once a day to take a shower, I would bring his food out to the garage. He did not have access to the house at all because if you don't want to come home, you don't have access to the house. So one day he was gone for about a day or so. So when he came home, he wanted to go in the garage. I let the garage down. I called the police. And I told the officer, I said, talk to him. I said, and let him know that living in the garage is a blessing compared to being in jail. I said, but you have access to all this that you see, but you don't want it because you want to hang out with your friends and you're letting the peer pressure dominate your intellect and your ability of consciousness. So the policeman came over and talked to him, and he was like, yeah, okay, you know. And, it took him a while, but then I think he started to understand, like, wow, man. So I told him, you can apologize every month, but every month you're still going to be in the garage. When you mess up, because an apology will get you back in the house. So I know how the father felt, especially if he was younger than that, because that you can do as a parent. But sometimes you have, you know, just like a lot of comedians say, you know, I got this one comedian say, he said, man, I got 6 kids, and people say it's too many. He said, but I'm going to keep having them until I find one I like.
And I can feel that.
I can relate to that, so I understand his point. So I was just throwing that personal story out there to show that it's not that far fetched to be the correct move.
And I did not know that. So okay, that's one way of looking at it. Christopher, how do you look at it?
I think it would depict, and it would also depend on the relationship, not just with the child, but with the police. I mean,
yeah.
I think certain instances and situations can actually help. You know, they used to have that series, and I think it's coming back now, Scared Straight, where they had kids going into certain medium and maximum security institutions with inmates that basically were trying to advocate or scare kids into the reality of what prison is really all about, and that they need to, while they have the opportunity to turn their lives around. So, I mean, I think you have to be careful with anything that you do, but this could have been something that this parent saw as unnecessary or the lesser of the two evils in terms of maybe getting through to the child. And in some cases, some parents have just reached the wit's end and they've tried to do all that they can. But again, I get back to ensuring that, you know, if you're maximizing how you're modeling, you know, you can't be telling your kids one thing and calling the police to do this, and you got a lot of issues going on yourself that are questionable. But as much as possible, you need to be beyond reproach, provide as much as you can to that child. And if it involves, I guess, bringing the police in to kind of put it in perspective or scaring the child, I think it depends on the parent or the parents, and it could be something that could be used in a positive or beneficial way. But I just think you have to be careful and know why you're doing what you're doing, and you pretty much just have to go from there.
I agree.
See, my father told us growing up, he said, look, he said, I would do everything I can do for you here, but if you go to jail, I'm not visiting you, I'm not putting no money on your books.
Mm.
You know, he said, unless you go to jail for something you didn't do. He said, but other than that, you know what I've taught you. He said, you are a representative of Jimmy J. Houston when you go out there. When people see you, they're going to say, you're Jimmy J.'s son, right? And that's what they used to do. They say, ain't you Jimmy J.'s son? So you kind of stick your chest out a little bit, straighten your back up, because you say, I can't do what these people around me are doing because they know my daddy.
I just see it two ways. And your story helped, but I just think today we're in a police state, and I think we have to realize that the police are not our kids' babysitters. And so I think unless I had an established relationship with an officer, and maybe they were a friend of the family's, and I knew that officer was a good officer. And not all officers are bad officers, and I want to put that out there. I don't hate the police. I mean, not at all. I think without them, we'd be in a hell of a lot of trouble. But I think there's some bad apples in the bunch, definitely. But that said, if I had an officer friend that I thought had a positive influence on my child, maybe. But other than that, probably not. Okay, y'all, that's going to happen.
My situation was this. I didn't know the officers. But my thing was, when it came out, I explained to them what the issue was. I explained to my son why I called them. So I said, tell him. So I was in control of the conversation and the method that was used. So it wasn't that I needed a friend. It was that I needed him to know that outside of this perimeter, this lawn that we call ours, those police have jurisdiction over you because you're of age now. That was the issue I was making.
Okay. Listen, y'all, it's been another great week here. I really enjoyed the dialogue. And we're here each and every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Central, 9 to 11 Eastern. Tell a friend, tell a family member, tell a church member, check out the show. Also, listen, y'all, I want to put it out there because I have a personal problem with Clay Cooley Nissan in Dallas, Texas. And Clay Cooley doesn't just have Nissan. He has several dealerships here in Texas and Arkansas. Any audience member of mine, don't shop with Clay. You're not going to get a fair deal. He's not going to play fair. He knows it. I have declared war, and he knows this. So I am telling anybody who's shopping for a car, Clay Cooley, where it says on his commercial, come see Clay, don't go see Clay. I'm going to put it out there. Don't go see Clay with Clay Cooley, okay? Or Clay Cooley dealership, anywhere in the Metroplex, anywhere in Arkansas, anywhere across the country, don't do business with Clay. Just putting it out there. Okay, guys, we got to get out of here. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.